sold for half or whatever, what we speculate it would be sold for, then this would be a general fund obligation. But it wouldn't affect that general obligation bond number. It does affect the general fund, no question about that. Money has to come from somewhere. Does that get fairly close to the bottom of what you had in mind, or do you want to go at this more?
No, I understand what you're saying. I guess you're talking about what you would bond, and I'm talking about what's bondable. There's a disagreement on that.
Somebody talk about what we should bond.
Will you let us take that under advisement, Will?
Sure.
Yesterday, you asked also, Mr. Duncan, was there a consultant's report about escalation rates and so on? And since some of our reports have pages omitted in them and so on, Cottonfeld and I had a disagreement as to what we did have and what we didn't have. But in Part 9B of our documents, back in the very back, you'll find a series of pages that were done by Hanscom, and they talk about indices. And the discussion, this projected indices are back here. And I point out also that the same consultant for the Capital Site Selection Committee established some cost indices in 1975. And these are on page 50.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure those give me the information that I wanted, though. What you have here is just a indices showing, for example, that if the base was 100% in Anchorage, then for construction that year you would use 110% of Willow and 115% of Juneau.
No. There is indeed one page that says that. Go to the next preceding page.
Preceding
page 48. Did we skip page 48 for you?
No, I haven't, but next preceding confused me. Go ahead.
Page 48. Here is still under the heading of indices are recommendations that he has made about percentages, and I'm not sure that I completely understand these percentages. We did not adopt these percentages. We used a uniform 8% inflation rate year in and year out.
Didn't Mr. Hanscom present to the commission what the annual inflation rate might be based upon these various percentages that he has here? Did you ask him to do that?
No. Not that I'm aware of. I'm not the executive director. He may have asked for something. I don't know.
He has here a number of different things, a 0.75% per month, 1% a month, 1.5%, etc. I'm wondering, seen, but the commission might have wanted to follow that through to see what that would come out with an average annual inflation rate. Your consultant,
he's dealt in indices here, and that's why I say I'm not exactly sure what he has here. He's not saying that this is flat out an escalation rate of 9% per year or what have you. He's dealing in terms of indices as I understand it. I hope he is, because if he isn't, by 1995, he has the equivalent of a 12% inflation rate for Willow for 17 years. And I certainly couldn't buy that at this point.
You know, as I read it, he says for 1980 and 82, escalation would be at 0.75% a month.
Right.
What's that come out to? I don't know.
little better than 9% per annum, if you read that in the same context as our 8% per year.
And that's the way I read it.
Well, I'm not sure, as I say, whether to read it that way or whether to not read it, because what happens, as I say, over the time span of 1977 to 1994, this comes out to be a 12% per annum compounded inflation rate.
I see that.
And $1 becomes $6.81 by that time.
Well, it seems to me that's a very important thing to find out. Is it possible to get an explanation from Mr. Hanscom as what he actually meant here?
I'm pretty sure he was speaking in terms of the contingency just because the work he did for the Capital Site Selection Committee on page 50, he speaks of using the indices. Page 50.
I see it.
Yeah.
Now, this same consultant.
So what are you saying, Bill, again?
Same consultant, Hanscom Associates, was the one who did the inflation work for the site selection. And we used an indice for that study then. And I don't believe he would have changed from an indice to a compounded rate.
So what are you saying? He'd set the base, say, at 1980 and then increase it 3/4% a month for the years 1980 to 82, and then at 1% a month for the year 1982 to 84.
But the point is that this is using an indice rather than a compounded rate. The difference by the time you get to 1994 is dramatically different. Back to page 50 in the Capital Site Selection Committee column, that is on an indice. If you were to compound that out, that would compound out at an average inflation rate of about 8% or a little bit more than 8%.
For the Capital Site Selection Committee, as Bill pointed out, there are numbers given on page 50 by the same consultant. And if you take his numbers between 1974 and 1990 and run out what that compounds to, it's a 7.5% per annum compound rate. Now the numbers back here on page 48, 2 or 3 years later, run out to be a 12% compounded rate. If you
take these figures and run them out through the period of the construction period of the new capital,
yeah,
you get an average rate.
12%.
Is that what it comes to? 12%.
Yeah, around.
If you increase from 80 to 82, 3/4%.
If you follow the schedule, you end up with an overall 12% per annum compounded each year.
But you don't agree that that's what he meant?
I rather doubt that he did, because the same person a few years ago, when he had seen 1974-75, gave the Capital Site Selection Committee a 7.5% rate. Down to 1990s.
When did he do that?
For the Capital Site Selection Committee, I believe it was done in, well, he said 1975. Now, if I run his numbers out, I've tried to run these numbers out several ways since you asked about this yesterday, and if I run the run the numbers out on an index basis, I end up with an interest rate that's a little bit in excess of 8% per annum. It's not 9% per annum. It's about 8.3 or 4% per annum. So that's why I have the feeling that he used an index rather than this other thing. Because 12% per annum doesn't make any sense in the context of anything that we can get our hands on. Again, in the yellow report of yesterday, and yours is red, I guess, the cost inflation rate for Anchorage that they report in here during, on an average from 1970 to 1977, several years of which were pipeline years, was in the order of 9.2 or 9.3%. So I don't see that the 12% is defensible in any way, shape, or form.
What years were that? What was that?
1970 to 1977. This is on the first Brown page in here. They give three different indices here for Anchorage, and over the time span 1970 to 1977, one index is 9.5%, the other two are 9.1%. The Fairbanks indices, even when impacted by pipeline years, averaged about 8.9%.
For a shorter period of time, though, we had testimony yesterday for the years 1974 to 77.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
For the years 1974 to 77, we had testimony yesterday that from another individual that, looking at several different indexes, they showed inflation rates in Anchorage of 12.5 during that period and so on. So it depends on the period of time you're using.
Well, they used 7 years here.
Right.
Four of which were pipeline years.
Okay.
Now, we're trying to tell you where we came from in establishing 8%. If you believe 9% or 10%, I sure as a Dickens am not going to argue with you, but I want to tell you where we came from in establishing our 8%. That's all I'm trying to get at here.
I
understand there's differences of opinion of this. Fine.
Yeah, I was just trying to pin down where your consultant was coming from, too, and I'm not sure we've really pinned it down yet. But the consultant that you apparently didn't use.
Okay.
Mr. Meeker.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Another question you might want to take under advisement, look it up. I don't know unless you have the answers ready, but it's in regard to the assumptions that the commission made in regards to the number of state employees and the rate of growth of the number of state employees.
We're going to ask Mr. Malik to testify regarding that in just a little bit, but that's okay. He's here,
sure.
He'll testify
okay.
When we
good.
Complete. There's in the evening, I've had to review again these things that came out of the hat yesterday. There are some blue pages in here which relate to new cities and new communities. And I think that it's interesting that this is here because we have been through a number of problems that were, or a number of questions that were raised here, and I think we should respond to those. The questions are, would a new city go or wouldn't a new city go? And most of the testimony indicated in here is that new cities are a bad show. Early on, we hired for one of our principal consultants, the American Cities Corporation, because they had been involved in what is turning out to be a successful new city. We didn't want to deal with people who were not successful in this area. And these people told us roughly the following. They indicated that this city should be a successful new city, and they gave the following reasons. First of all, the land is free. There's no upfront money to be borrowed and no interest to be paid on that land. And what many of these cities have run into during the development process, especially early on, is that before they can sell land, they're paying such large amounts of money on interest that they simply can't handle it. They go into receivership. The interest rate which the CDC and the state would have to pay, the state on the general obligation bonds is 6%, and we have programmed the CDC to pay 7% interest. This is much less than private developers, I'm told, normally have to pay. They're oftentimes in the 10, 12, perhaps 15% league for short-term money. And I'm not an expert in that area, but that's what our consultants tell us. We have been conservative on our sales pace. Now you can argue with the land sales price, but on the sales pace, how many units of land we sell each year, have been very conservative because we have assumed no capture of people from outside of the government area. Now let me be sure we understand what I'm saying. Government employees plus for each government employee one supporting job, and this is converted into families, as I indicated yesterday, and converted into population. And 80% of all of that. We have only assumed that in the city. We have not assumed capturing anybody from outside. There are relatively few problems dealing with several agencies. Very often when a developer goes into a new city situation, he buys up the land, and while he's paying interest on the land, he also runs into troubles with the government agencies that are supposed to provide the schools and the streets and the this and the that. Things just don't work out right. We anticipate little or very few problems with this because the CDC would have the hammer hand here and would develop the land once the basic permits are established. There are no competing cities for people to live in. Palmer is a town, but it's not a city of the caliber that we would propose here. Anchorage really, as far as quality of life is concerned, probably would not compete with this new city. So there is practically nothing in Alaska that could compete with this within a reasonable commuting distance. They're building jobs. This is extremely important to a new city. Many new cities have to go out and try to capture an industry so they can get jobs into the city so that people will move into the city. There are built-in jobs for this. You don't have to go out and capture an industry and so on. And we indeed have not postulated that any industries would be captured. So the consultants that we have who have new town experience have been through the mill, and they've been through it for about 15 years now or a little bit longer, tell us that this is built-in utopia for the developer. The CDC, given proper management, has to have good management, excellent management. Given that codicil, should really go. I think that probably addresses most of the questions that were raised in the blue part of this, and I think there are questions which should be raised and they should indeed be answered. Before we ask Dan Malik from Leonard Lane Associates to talk about the 6% growth rate in state government, do you have any questions before we...
Could I ask you a question?
Yes.
I apologize for not knowing this beforehand. Just how this works now, the state's going to, is the state going to sell the land to the Capital Development Corporation?
It gives the land
give
to
it
the capital,
to
that's right.
And they sell it?
That's right.
And the money comes back to the general fund?
It comes back to the Capital Development Corporation initially because it's running behind. It's borrowing money from the general fund for the first 10 years or so. So it comes back to the Capital Development Corporation for further development of land. And then in the late 1880s and through the 1990s, it's making more money than it's putting out. So that money then, when the Capital Development Corporation folds up in 1994 or thereabouts, goes back to the state, yes.
In the computation of the cost of the capital, the money collected by the Capital Development Corporation, what I'm getting at is this land belongs to the state. They could sell it otherwise, and it seems to me what I'm getting
okay,
at.
Okay, I know what you're trying to say.
Okay.
I think I do anyhow. The undeveloped land, you're saying, if the capital were not moved, the undeveloped land could be sold for some price. And we're not plugging that price into the cost of this capital. And no, we did not. We're selling the land. We're proposing to sell the land for a lot more than that undeveloped price. However, on a per acre basis, it begins at about $40,000 an acre and steps up beyond that. So it's sold for a very hefty price. Now, in my opinion, what it's worth, I think the cost in a no-move study, I think that, and Bill may disagree with me on this, but we've discussed this back and forth, and I think that the value of that land in a no-move study should be a negative cost or income, if you wish, the undeveloped land now I'm talking about, in a no-move study. If the capital isn't moved, that land could be sold off. And it is undeveloped land, you have to recognize that. But anyhow, that would be a negative cost or income in a no-move study. I hate seeing anybody make a no-move study without that. I don't know what the value would be. Someone has to establish what that acreage is. Now, we have proposed developing only
about a third of the land there. The rest would go to the Department of Parks or what have you as a park anyhow. That would have to be taken.
I don't know that it's important, but it just seems to me that the value of the land, the income that could be derived by the state in a no-move situation, that the difference between that and the developed land with the capital there, again, should be part of the capital move.
Part of the import. It could be looked at that way, and maybe a cost accountant would argue with this. I don't know, Bill, but if you look at it that way and then not considered as income under a no-move plan, but it can't be counted twice. We, however, said the land is free. That's how we cost it. The land is free, and any loot that comes from it is income.
I disagree with that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just telling you how we did it.
Okay.
No, it's an arguable point, certainly.
Mr. Rhodes?
Under that development corporation land, did I understand, was that 110 acres?
No.
We were talking about?
No, that is only for the capital complex.
That's just for the...
Yeah, there's 10,000 acres ultimately that gets developed, and I think there's even more beyond that. I don't recall it exactly, but anyhow, there's 66,000 acres, plus or minus, excuse me, in the entire area. But a lot of that is, for all practical purposes, undevelopable.
Mr. Swanson and then Ms. Buckle.
Yeah. In the 10-mile square, and 110 acres of that is supposed to be to a capital city, and this, according to you, this is supposed to be a government city. As just a few minutes ago you said, this is a government city, and it's not going to go out and solicit a sawmill in a steel plant and anything else.
It could. We haven't assumed that, however, that would capture anything like that. We're not proposing it necessarily to be that.
It's not supposed to be
a
mill city at all.
It could be, but we haven't.
Of course, be a capital.
Yeah.
Then you turn right around and told us that the land was valued at $40,000 an acre. What kind of a state agency could afford to build a building and rent it back to the state through your corporation for land valued at $40,000 an acre? We're not going to build a mill city and sawmills and steel mills and what have you. And what we're going to build on this 10-mile square is going to be government. I can't imagine us. Me selling myself a piece of land that I own for zero and back to myself for $40,000.
I don't think we plan to.
No, but you just got through telling us the value of the land that you're are you going to arrive at the $700 billion.
Yeah. This is selling. This is selling for homes and industrial development. That is hotels, department stores, and so on. Now there is a cost to the government, however, state government, and it's 110 acres because infrastructure has to go into that. So that land, as far as we're concerned, is free to the government, but the infrastructure has to be paid.
Well, this is just going to be sold to homes, and it's not going to be for any kind of industrial development.
Home shopping centers,
$40,000 an acre.
It could be apartment houses. There could be some industrial development.
You gave us 10,000 acres, didn't you?
Excuse me?
10,000 acres that would be sold under this.
Roughly 10,000. 10,000 devoted to the city. Well, this depends on how far you play it out to. You can play it out to the year 2100 and more land could be sold, indeed. The city probably has a limit in size within the fairly well-developable areas of about 75, maybe 100,000. But we haven't...
All going to live off the government.
In actual fact, if the 6% growth rate goes until the year 2100, there would be many more government employees than that.
Well, our present cost now is is approximately $1,000 per capita per person that pays taxes in Alaska now. So in year 1985-1990, the cost per capita per person, given twice the population, would probably be $6,000 per capita per person.
I can't argue with you.
Yeah. Ms. Buckle.
Well, I would like to follow up. I had the same train of thought as Mr. Swanson. What I'd like to know is that some 6,000 to 10,000 acres of land that will be available by PCDC. What portion of that will be going to individual purchasers rather than going to developers or real estate agencies?
I don't think we really know at this point. There's an area that we wanted to develop and set aside for individual 2.5 acre lots, and I don't know whether the CDC would give that to a developer and let him develop it, sell it to a developer and let him develop it, or whether CDC would do it. We haven't really gotten that far down the tracks, I don't think.
Well, let me just, page 35 of the main report here has a broken out to 10,840 acres for residential homes, 3,113 for apartments, 1,150, and other multifamily, 577. So that's roughly about half of it be devoted to living properties.
And that would be at least about 40,000 per acre. That's how it's going to go.
There are about, some of the land, Jay, goes for $100,000+ per acre. Not all that's residential land, though. And we begin with $40,000 an acre in 1980 or 82, and it escalates at 8% per year.
And from what I understand is that with or without the capital move, there will be some 100,000 people settling in
In Matsu, I think it was 120, I don't remember the
range.
Number, I think it was range, but one of the estimates was 125,000 by when, the year 2000? Was it 1994? I don't recall.
It was in the 94 range. It ranged from about 120 to 140,000.
There is a plot, one of the reports here, gives you that. I don't recall just where it is. I can find it for you.
Yeah. Have you ever considered preferences for local residents in the purchase of this land rather than people from coming from maybe other parts of the country?
We did not do that. That's something the Capital Development Corporation would have to address. That's a detail really that's beyond us at this point.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back into this. I think she was,
are you familiar?
Yes,
Mr.
I'd like to go back to this price of this land again. It's going to be sold to someone who's going to work in the capital, be a worker there. And it's $40,000 an acre, or you said $100,000 for 2.5 acres, which would, for land at that value, probably build 3 houses on it. The land itself would be worth $30,000 or $35,000 per lot per person to build a house on. That house would probably cost $100,000. Just using the basis of if a man can afford to pay $30,000 for a lot to build a house on, he's certainly going to build a $100,000 to $150,000 house on it.
Let me give you the prices per acre that we have tabulated, and these are $1978. We've tabulated in the low density area. This would be 2.5 acre lots, that the price per acre would be $16,000, not the $40,000 that I said. But the lot is $40,000. And then in the 1/4 acre conventional urban development area, where there's four lots to the acre, the price per acre would be $87,500. In the cluster patio, $120,000 an acre, mobile homes, $112,500, single family attached dwellings, $64,000 an acre, and apartments, $72,000 an acre. And that's the schedule. Now, did I get your question?
Okay, well, you only quoted the $40,000 an acre, and I just put 3 homes on an acre of ground. And that's fairly crowded for that price of land for the type of house you'd build on it.
This is a city. I think we have to remember that it will no longer be wilderness, it'll be a city. Mm-hmm. And we felt these were the laws of the jungle as far as we're concerned.
Well, just wondering how much money that state worker is going to have to make in order to pay for a $100,000 home. They're all going to have to be consultants.
Well,
They're gonna have to make at least $60,000. They're all gonna have to make at least $60,000.
There are many government workers living in Anchorage right now.
What are they paying Lieutenant Gussie?
Go ahead.
Just the pricing of the housing, today's cost is equivalent to what you would pay for Juneau or Anchorage today. It's assumed that as the price of land goes up, that the salaries and wages would go up also, so that they would have sufficient monies to buy this as inflation takes effect.
Mr. Swanson, by 1978 construction dollars, we have estimated that, maybe I better back off. I'll forget about that for a moment. Come back.
You're gonna get us into $250,000.
$250,000 houses here.
You couldn't even build a garage there.
Do you have further comments you want to make?
I don't think we have, no.
Further questions from the committee? Did you have someone else who said?
Mr. Malik, yeah.
Mr. Malik?
There's some question about 6%.
All right.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes. Mr. Belkin, just a moment, please. Mr. Duncan.
Just one quick question. Do we have a percentage breakdown between the regular type residences and mobile homes and so on?
Sure, sure.
Can you, off the top of your head, tell me how many mobile homes?
No, I'm sorry, I can't. Can we have a copy of it? In a moment.
You had a copy of it there. You read from it.
That was just the costs per unit, but not the breakdown.
Can multiply that.
We can get it in a moment.
Percentage breakdown.
Mort will dig that up.
Well, I don't think I'm gonna build a house there.
Was the impression given that it would cost more to build a house in Willow than any place else in the Anchorage Bowl?
Yeah, I could do it.
Was the impression given that it would cost more to build a house in Willow than it would any place else in the Anchorage Bowl? Is that, there's no reason to believe that.
I don't know.
I don't know why Red's worrying about a house. I'm
gonna get a gut house there.
Cost estimates were derived by communicating with people who are building today in Wasilla, Palma, the outskirts of Anchorage, and we used the same exact cost estimates for what comparable things are being built for today.
That confused me.
Pardon me?
Confused me, because I was just looking at the cost index that Mr. Belkin had pointed out, which showed that the index in Willow is 110, and Anchorage is the base of 100.
No, okay, we used those cost indices, but they're 100%.
So I've been attending.
That's what I'm asking.
You're saying that, what are you saying?
Well, the Anchorage Bowl, that would include Palma and Wasilla. Palma and Wasilla would be.
That's what the report says, Anchorage 100, Willow 110.
Juneau 115.
I'm including Willow in the bowl, but we use costs that are comparable in Wasilla, which is 15 miles away. And if they're 10% higher, then they're 10% higher. But
yeah. Probably not a major point, except I can't understand why you include Willow in the bowl when your report says Willow's not in the bowl.
Do you want to pursue that further, Mr. Duncan?
Well, I don't know how we got off on that, other than the fact that
Mr. Chairman,
the real cost more to build in Willow than in Anchorage. I think that's pretty clear. But my real question, my first question was, what was the percentage of mobile homes as compared to residences?
Could you come up with that information and give it to Mr. Duncan directly?
This is Mr. Malik from Leonard Lane Associates. Yesterday there was a question about the 6% inflation rate of state employment, and they were the consultants who guided us. The commission, however, did zero in on 6% rather than 6.1 or 6.2.
or what have you, so we take responsibility for that. Mr. Malik represents Leonard Lane, and that was a consultant which got us into the ballpark. Mr. Malik, could you go ahead?
Mr. Malik.
Do you have a question you'd like me to respond to, or would you like for me to start with just a general discussion as to where the percentage numbers that have been quoted have come up with?
Is there a specific question for the committee? Mr. Meekin?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just reading your memo here provided to us. Well, I have a couple questions about the 6% growth rate. We tried to calculate, you know, what the rate's been for different years, and for 1964 to 79, taking that large one, we got 7.4%. And from 1970 to 79, that period of time, we got about 7.5%. But from 74 to 79, the figure comes up to 4.9%. And that, I'd like to indicate what that is. You know, when we decentralized state-operated schools, there were about 1,530 positions that were lost, that were being carried by the state government, that were lost. So we kept those in there, even though really they're not reflected. And I think perhaps it might be more accurate to keep some of those, to take some of those out. Maybe not all of them, but some of them out. If you take all of them out, the growth rate between 74 and 79 is 2.1%. The reason I think you might want to keep them in, take them out, and get the lower rate is because, you know, the way I see state employment and state government growth is that we started in statehood, we didn't have much of a government or much of a budget or much of anything. We're in real bad shape. We had a tremendous amount of needs. And when you have a whole lot of needs, you're basically a limitation on government growth, and, you know, addressing those needs and services is the budget. And as our budget grew, we really tried to address some of those needs, and our number of employees grew dramatically. For instance, in 69, I think we doubled the state budget in 1 year, 100% increase. So when you calculate 69 into these figures, it really skews it. But, you know, but once you get to a fairly large number of employees, you can slow down the rate. And I think that it's more accurate than if you're trying to predict what for the next 15 years or something is going to be the rate of growth of state government, to look at the last 5 years, for instance. And if you do take out the SOS teachers, which and central state employees, which, you know, indeed is an effort of the state to decentralize, which I think we're moving in that direction. We're attempting, at least on the Finance Committee, we deal with it every year, trying to reduce the number of state employees, and you get a 2.1% increase, which I think that's probably low, you know, in terms of averaging for the next 15 years. But I'm just wondering how you know, what you think of that. I mean, you seem to indicate that since we're going to have lots of surplus revenue, therefore we're going to just sort of have unbounded growth in the number of state employees, and it doesn't seem to me like we will. That's just my opinion. I know these are guesses, but, and if you take the last 5 years, it indicates it won't be 6%. Something less than that.
You got a very complicated question there. One is because I'm not familiar with the numbers that you're coming up with, but I know the phenomena that you're describing here. Let's try to focus ourselves on what is the unit of this number that we're looking at. Okay, it's a compounded growth rate, first of all. The number that's quoted in the report, and the only numbers that are quoted in the report related to state government personnel, relate to only a very limited part of state government, and that's central positions. Okay, central positions have been defined. The government as a whole is much larger than those central positions. Okay, so when we start looking at numbers that look at the government as a whole, it's very difficult, particularly for me, and I'm sure for anyone else who actually starts playing with the numbers, to ask themselves, well, now what does that mean when I'm looking at only a part of state government, which in this case is roughly about one quarter of it. Okay. If you have 100 bodies out there and it grows at 2%, you add, let's say, two bodies. Well, let's say those two bodies happen to grow in what we call central positions, which are 25%. So that's two as a percentage of only 25 bodies, not the 100. Consequently, the growth rate for the central positions is much larger than the 2% for the government overall. And this is something you definitely have to keep straight. One of the things I don't have in front of me, and I'm sure you don't have in front of you, is the scorecard. This is a numbers game. You really have to keep all the players on the right side in order to really make heads or tails out of the numbers.
But on the other hand, I mean, I see where you're coming from on that, but on the other hand, you know, I think we all know that there's efficiency to scale as the number of state employees and as the state gets larger. You know, you might, when we, in 1960, we had one commissioner of revenue. We still have one commissioner of revenue, even though we probably have 10 times as many employees in the Department of Revenue. So there, you know, that's an extreme example, but there are examples like that. And also computerization, which we're implementing in my budget, are saving us lots of central state employees because of the terminal that can be accessed. We don't need the central state employees in the Capitol. And it just seems to me that everyone that's dealing with these questions, even on a national level, knows that the trend in state government is to, first of all, is to decentralize. Secondly, is to try to increase efficiency, and that the historical rates, if anything, are probably going to be decreased in terms of growth, particularly if you look at Alaska, because we've had this tremendous growth in the last 15 years for a lot of reasons, and it's going to slow down of its own volition, you know, just whether we make any action or not to try to slow it down. Plus, I think there's a will, at least right now in the legislature, to slow it down. So it seems to me that, you know, the historical rates are probably too high, and the ones we have for the last 5 years are very low compared to 6%.
Again, a lot of issues in there, and I don't dispute at all. Maybe a number of the things you say, I think, are really quite very much in my mind also. What you ought to be aware of the fact is that when we did this study, we did not analyze the management efficiency of state government, and we did not in any way, shape, or form indicate what kinds of decreases in the growth rate of state government or state government central position may come from successful, you know, institution of management efficiencies in the organization. I have no idea as to whether or not that's reasonable or irrelevant or possible or probable. Okay. When it comes down to looking at the number, we've had two different numbers here on the table today that we've discussed, and I'd like to at least look at the two numbers side by side, if for no other reason than to show you the tremendous difference in the way I think you ought to be evaluating it. On the one hand, you've had an inflation rate, 8%, 10%, whatever. And on the other hand, we've got this other number that's, let's say it's 6% for growth in state central positions. Okay, the two numbers are very different in this way. It's like we're in a game of trying to guess what's happening in the future. We're trying to project. We're trying to extend our current experience on into the future in order that we can make reasonable assumptions to plan a city by. In the inflation rate, the things that affect inflation rate are very, very complex and very hard to model out or for any single individual to understand, let alone for any policy, any single policy on the part of state government or any other individuals to affect it. It's like trying to affect the number of leaves which sprout on a tree. We know it happens every year. We can measure the number when it happens. But the way in which that number comes about is a very strange, almost uncontrollable process. The numbers of state personnel that you have is not that kind of number. It's something that every year comes up, and you decide upon it. You can see it. You count the bodies. You either fund it or you don't. Okay? It's not something that just magically appears. It's something that you almost decide by policy. So consequently, the way you ought to look at how should we view these projections, okay, are quite different. In projecting the number of state employees, we're saying, we're assuming that the precedent that has been set by the legislature in the past, which you've quoted figures for, which we have analyzed to determine what that precedent is, if you extend that precedent in the future, here's the most reasonable growth rate to be expected. If you decide to break with that precedent in a great number of areas, sure, you can change dramatically the number. But that's, again, we're only evaluating the precedent. Okay?
Well, I think, you know, it makes it, as we all know in the average figures, if you have a trend line that goes like this and it's on a decrease, but for years and years it's been on the increase, if you average it, you're going to get an upward trend. But I think you have to make, at some point with statistics, you have to make a judgment as to which one of those trends, when one is going up and one is going down, is the realistic one.
Definitely.
And it seems to me, if you look at the fact that we decentralized state-operated schools, we have a bill in right now that's likely to pass that decentralized the University of Alaska, which the total budget of which is probably about a tenth of our general fund appropriation or more. You know, we certainly have that trend, and in my budget, health and social service, which is a very large proportion of the total state budget, we've implemented, you know, a lot of very man-saving efficiencies. A lot of them have been recommended by your firm, as a matter of fact. And, you know,
when you have a computer out in Bethel and a person out there, eligibility worker, can do the determination right there on the spot in the computer, you know, with access to a central computer in Juneau, you don't need four or five people in Juneau handling that mail and making decisions and punch cards and that kind of stuff and then sending it back. And so you have, you do have some tremendous efficiencies that are possible to save, particularly just those in terms of economies of scale. And it just seems to me that with all that in mind, a person would make the judgment that the trend that we have recently, which is to decrease the number, decrease the rate of growth of central state employees or employees in general, I think you'd have to think that 6% was a little high.
No, I don't think 6% is a little high. Again, we did not analyze the opportunities for making changes in the way state government personnel are decided upon to either exist or not exist from year to year. I don't disagree with your statement at all, and I would think as a taxpayer in the state, that sounds just fine to try to institute those types of efficiencies that may indeed show us decreases. That's, my faith says that that's probably a very favorable sort of thing. Unfortunately, my professional position on this requires me to take a look at what's happened in the past and try to take my own optimistic biases out of it and go to some things that I think are much more statistically based, as you suggested. There has been some substantial statistical work done on the economy of the state. I quote this in the letter that is presented to you here. It's the Man in the Arctic model. It basically has said that the economy of the state is very, very much related to what happens in the petrochemical resource business, and somehow we'd like to see what kind of impacts changes in the petrochemical resource business have on the state as a whole. As we're all aware, a major segment of our economy is state government. Consequently, this model does indeed allow us some statistical method of projecting state government and local government growth. And I quote some figures in there. One of the interesting things that comes out is that in the modeling, has been developed by looking at the way the precedent has occurred over the years, you find that if we look at the two different kinds of personnel as drawn out in our study, central personnel and non-central, all others, you find that population growth has a great deal to do with the growth in non-central personnel. And again, this follows very closely what you've just said. As the number of people in the state expand in more diverse areas, there's a greater and greater need for more people to be out there to serve them on the part of the government. Okay, there is also some secondary impact, and you need more central positions to coordinate, organize, plan for, control, whatever, those regional personnel. But for the most part, population dramatically and very strongly affects the regional people. Now when you turn around and ask the question, well then what affects central personnel? Well, again, statistical analysis shows that central personnel are probably most keenly affected by the amount of money available to the legislature when they approve their budgets.
Well, that's
revenue-based. Now, you may not agree with that.
Mr. Chairman, statistical analysis cannot tell cause and effect. It can tell you correlation.
That's right.
And I don't doubt that the correlations that you found are correct. That's but right. I deal with these decisions and have for 4 years in government on the Finance Committee. Right. And I think I know when I make my decision, I'm probably the best person in the entire world to know what my mind was thinking when
Absolutely.
I made that decision. And I make these kind of decisions. I think I know what other legislators think. And I don't, you know, I don't particularly feel that the amount of money available main cause of whether I'm going to increase the number of central state employees, but that population is the cause of me increasing the number of employees that are in the outreach. You know, first of all, I don't make that distinction in my mind, central or not. I make it based upon is the position justified, and if it's justified, then I say yes, unless there's not enough money.
Well,
so need is a tremendously large factor.
I go back to my first statement. Now, let's not try to analyze a 6% figure like you do an inflation rate. You do have the power to use these opinions that you've got about the way state government ought to grow, and I should think that no one would argue with you if it ought to be need that bases growth, not the amount of dollars available. That's not a point of argument. We're not deciding that or reflecting that in any of our analysis.
Well, the Institute, the ISER study, which you, the Man in the Arctic program, they did analysis for us, and it showed that by 1987, we'd be deficit spending, and by 1992, we'd be $2 billion in the hole, even with our tremendous surpluses. But because of the way the Prudhoe curve is shaped, and if we increase our revenue, our total expenditures at 15% per year, which has been the average for a certain period of time, and they projected on that basis, that we'd have this tremendous deficit. And so, you know, the finance committees are working with the, at least I am, working with these numbers and thinking that we can't continue to increase at these tremendous high rates, or we're going to be in trouble.
Lest we argue about the reasonableness of the Man in the Arctic program, I think it ought to go on the record that the Man in the Arctic program has not been used to produce the numbers, as far as I know, the piece that we did for the Capital Site Selection Commission report. We use it only as one of a number of different ways for you to very logically check. I mean, you can all have your own opinions as to how relevant it is. We've made ours, okay? I can describe in detail where the percentage rate has come from that is indeed reflected in the report.
Well,
but it is not that number, so.
Let's get to that question. Like, you quote here that they just, I understand that you didn't use the figure, but they say that state government growth in the 74 to 85 period, this is on page 2 of your memo here that's been provided, is estimated at 8.1%. That, it says state government growth. What does that mean? Does that mean central state employee growth?
No, it means
total state government
that's
growth.
That's right.
I mean, the dollar figure of the budget, if it was $100, it would be 108. Is that what it means?
No. 108.1? People and budget are different. I mean, dollars and people are different.
Yeah, I know they are. So which one does it refer to?
It refers to people.
Well, it says state government growth.
That's right. And the whole letter there refers to counts of positions, people. Again, like I said, we have to really make sure we got the same scorecard. We didn't deal with any dollars and cents in our work.
Well,
surely people, and all the numbers I quote are people or him.
Well, you know, that's interesting because we give our employees inflation in the contracts, and then we give them step increases every year. And if you add those two up, you know, this year, not increasing the number of employees at all, the increase in the cost of personal services is 12.5%. That's without any new employees. That's just the step increases plus inflation that's called for in their contract. And we're, you know, this gives us flips. I mean, we have a lot of trouble with that in finance because it's a tremendously large increase. In fact, this year, almost all the budgets that I handle, the only increase, except for in some rare cases, was the built-in increases that are mandated by the contracts. But it was a pretty large increase, 12.5%. So it seems to me that if on top of that you're going to increase it 6%, that you've got a built-in impossibility. I mean, you're saying that revenues, you know, just to even accept your premise that revenues determine it. If you're talking about 6% plus 12.5%, that's 18.5% increase in that one section of the budget. And ISER's revenues show that we can't even afford to increase it at 15% per year, even assuming a 25% increase in exploration and discoveries of oil development. So, you know, it's a logistical impossibility in the sense that we won't have enough money. We'll have to reduce our growth rate from that, even if we don't have a finance committee that feels like we should.
There are many policy decisions the legislature might make to come up with numbers that are quite different from the ones that we have, and we're not reflecting our judgments as to what those policy decisions
no,
may
No, your judgment was that it's predominantly a function of available state revenues, and I'm telling you that the revenues are not available to increase the number of employees at the rate that you say they'll increase for the time that you're saying they'll increase.
I said the Man in the Arctic model had assumed that, and we didn't use the model.
You have to use some figures for available state revenues if that's what you're saying is the.
I didn't run the model. The model's not mine. Okay, I use that merely as a check that when that particular program was funded, they did an estimate that ought to be used as a comparison to the one that we did. They're quite different. You can argue that maybe there is something wrong with their estimate and they can defend it, but as far as we're concerned, that's no bearing on us.
I agree with that. Okay, I'm not speaking to that. I'm speaking to your statement here, okay? Whereas growth in central positions is predominantly a function of available state revenues. That's your statement, that's not their statement,
that's
yours.
Okay. That's right.
And I'm saying that therefore you have to consider available state revenues if you're going to predict them. If that's the predominant function, you have to somehow take into consideration available state revenues in your prediction. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you that three different studies, one done by State Legislative Affairs, one done by Legislative Finance, and one done by Institute of Social and Economic Research, which are the only three available, that predict state revenues, show that we don't have enough money to increase state employees at the rate that you're saying we will do it. And it belies your own assumption because you're saying the revenues will be available, and therefore we'll spend it.
Again, it's all a matter of scorecards. Maybe you're doing the same calculation I would do, maybe you didn't. I really don't know. See, we're talking about growth in a very small segment of state government, not the whole state government, okay? Not the whole thing, but a portion of it that represents less than 25%.
Then we would, okay, that's
now,
a
now maybe point. The growth in that less than 25% portion may be very easily funded by revenues, whereas that same growth applied to the whole government wouldn't.
Yeah, well
I have no idea where.
Well, if that were the case, and that is possible, if that were the case, then what would have to happen is that the growth rate in central state employees would have to be larger than the growth rate in the other in the rest of employment. If that were to happen, if you accept the fact that there's a budget constraint that wouldn't allow us to increase all of them at 6%, then if they were to increase at 6%, the other ones have to be less than 6%, say 5 or 4%, which I think isn't a good assumption, and again, it's just an assumption because it seems to me that the trend, if anything, is to decentralize rather than centralize state government.
Okay, look at the second bullet that I have there, which quotes some figures that have come from, you know, factual sources that don't represent any subjective opinion on my part. I believe it says that while the government overall has grown at some particular rate, the growth of those positions that reside in a capital city have grown greater than that. The thing being is that your major spurt in the growth of state government as it relates to expanding out into the regions has already occurred shortly after statehood, and that now there's a certain amount of resurgence to focusing that growth to the central positions and not out to the regional ones. Now, whether that's a matter of your policy for the future or not, again, you can change that policy as you see fit. But again, looking at that trend.
Yeah, well, I understand that you're not trying to make assumptions, and I am, of course, that I can make policy decisions,
sure.
But I understand that contradiction. But I just want to make clear to you that even if it is true that historically there's been we've centralized and state government.
Well, you're 75% decentralized.
If historically we've done that, I think the trend right now is to go the other way. I don't know how long that will last, but certainly the trend right now is to do that. And if you just, you know, you can calculate any 4 years you want, you got from 70 to 76, but I did it for 74 to 79, and I've got the number of employees increased per year by 2.1%. That's a lot different than 6%. And even if you put back in all those teachers and SOS people, it's only 4.9%, and that makes a difference of, instead of 8,600 central employees in the capital in 1994, there will only be 5,950, which is 2,700 employees difference. It's a tremendous difference. That whatever that assumption is, I'm sure you know that even a 1% change compounded is a tremendous difference after 1994. So I think it seems to me that we have to temper your judgments with what we know about the recent history.
I think that last statement of yours is absolutely correct.
Whether
or not I agree with your numbers,
could you quit right there? Sorry.
How am I done?
Further questions? Any questions from the committee?
Well,
I'm sure.
I had some of that point in the discussion. I'm not sure. I think I want you to clear in my mind just exactly how you arrived at 6%. Just without interrupting you and getting into a future policy decisions of the legislature, but exactly what you based your figure on. Okay.
I will do the best I can to describe the process fully with the understanding that it's very complicated. Okay. First of all, the number utilized is not a 6% figure applied overall. When you look at the results of the methodology we used, yes, the number results at being very similar to 6%. And of course, for purposes of describing the process, that still is a very reasonable way to summarize it. On the other hand, the numbers themselves came up quite differently. We looked at relocating people from the everywhere in Alaska, which seemed to look at only those central positions which currently resided in Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and others. And those numbers are reflected in our report. On a very specific definition of central positions. Okay, central positions are those positions that are not regional. It's like in the negative. We define regional position as a position whose job descriptions and responsibilities are limited to some geographic area of the state that is less than the entire state. Okay, that's a very, very broad, all-encompassing, conservative definition of what a central position is, okay? Looking at all those positions in the state that fall within this definition of a central position, on a department-by-department basis, we were able to come up with a count, okay? A fairly accurate count of what is the existing case today, okay? You've recently gone back and re-looked at those numbers, and I think the numbers come up substantially the same, with differences being in possibly the definition, okay? And of course, changes have occurred over time. But from that base, then, we had the problem of how do we project those on into the future, and in what groups should we project them into the future? We decided to project those, the growth in state personnel, central personnel now, on a department-by-department basis, and looking at departments as they reside in a particular location. So that means we looked at the growth that would be required for those central positions in the Department of Labor that are in Juneau into the future, as well as we looked at the growth of those people that are central positions, the Department of Labor in Anchorage, and wherever else they might be. So that means the growth rate, the 6% number, is really an accumulation of a lot of other growth rates, okay? Now, if you ever wanted to say, well, I don't believe the 6%, we could then say, well, how about this other one? And pretty soon you'd break the question down to such a small, finite little bit that you really are beyond the point of really having a fruitful discussion, because there are quite a few of these growth rate assumptions that were made. Now we ask ourselves, how did we make those growth rate assumptions? Well, we did it this way. When we counted existing positions to make sure, one, that they were indeed central, and that, two, they existed, okay, we asked the people that were in charge of the administrative handling of those individuals what they foresaw as being a most reasonable expansion of those personnel due to their understanding of the program. And the state of Alaska is on a program budgeting system. Some programs, they'd say, no, we're already up to the hilt. We've got more than enough people to handle the load that we project for many, many years in the future. This is a question and answer that people who come up with your program budgets ask themselves. And that's really at the point in your administrative handling of growth in state government where that question is really addressed, and we asked it right there. We broke down their responses into three fairly arbitrary groups. The one group was 2% growth, sort of, yeah, we're all right now. We don't see any substantial burst, okay? We broke a medium group that was at a 6% rate, and when we had a higher group that was the real fast movers who had programs that were online to be dramatically expanded, to expand the services into more areas, to increase the level of service per capita, whatever, and we provided them with a 10% growth rate. So looking at all the different department and location combinations, and having examined them almost on a program by program basis, we threw them into one of those three bins, the 2%ers, the 6%ers, the 10%ers, ran them out into the future, and lo and behold, you know what we found? The 6% number. So we asked ourselves, now, is that reasonable? And the way we answered the question as to reasonability was we went to a lot of more macroeconomic type of reviews, one of which being the man in the Arctic model, another being just taking a look at what historical trends have been, and so on and so forth. And in each case where we reviewed our model, or our little projection in the future based on certain program improvement assumptions or increase assumptions, we came up to the fact that, gee, they all tend to cross very close to the same point. Now, to break the growth in state government down into these various subgroups is very important to the capital move, because you aren't moving all central positions at once. You're moving them on almost a function-by-function basis. So that to program the requirements for the capital city, you have to look at, if I move this department first, who's the 10% grower, I've got to consider more people to be there than if I consider them the 2% growers. So it was a very important assumption for the planning of a new capital city to look at growth of state personnel at this fairly detailed level. And the numbers that we used come right from the program people themselves. Now, if you went down almost an item-by-item basis, I suppose one could say, well, it's not really 10, it's 8, and so forth. And that's true. Numbers become very subjective and indefensible at that point. But the thing is that overall, after you put them all together, does the number still ring true? And I believe it does.
As I understand your memo here on page 2, you look at the years 1960 to 1970, looking at central, which we call central state positions, the growth rate was about 6.3% a year in those positions. Is that correct, historically?
Right.
And for the years 1970 and 1976, that increased to 8%.
Now, those are capital personnel.
You don't, are those
Does that mean the same capital personnel and central positions? Is that?
No. No, it does not. Okay. There is very little data that could be either interpreted or manipulated or whatever to really determine what were the central personnel counts in years in the past. See, the only way today you can find out which person is a central personnel is to sit down with the administrator and really have him go over that little test question. Is he or isn't he? We don't have the opportunity to have gone back 10 years ago and asked those people then the same question. So there is a lot of subjectivity in our part.
But your assumption is that those capital, the majority of those capital city positions then would be central positions.
I think that's a fairly accurate statement.
Do you have the information available in one of our reports which shows which ones are the fast movers and which ones are the slow movers?
Yes.
As far as, you know, where is that?
Volume 2.
Volume 2.
You should also understand the fact that the growth rate in state government changes over time. Programs that are right now that are small but growing rapidly in the future are much bigger and growing rapidly. So that whereas state government in the early years, using central positions now, would tend to grow at one rate. By the time you get to the end of the relocation period, the makeup of state government programmatically is quite different. Consequently, the growth rate is somewhat different. But these are small variations.
Just to be sure I'm clear on this, you went to the actual administrators themselves, talked to them, had them look at their department, what was in the future, as to determine what they thought the growth rate in their central positions would be.
That was part of our process.
Some of them said 2%, some of them said 6%, some of them said 10%.
No. We assigned the arbitrary categories of 2, 6, and 10. Okay. When we went and talked to them, we said, what do you think about the increase in this program? And some people were very hesitant to give us numbers. Others were very quick to give us words. Okay. And it was our subjective opinion as professionals in the business to reinterpret that in terms of numbers. Okay. That's where our professional judgment was brought to bear. Because there are no numbers of that sort. You can't go to an accounting manual and pull a number out and say that's it. It's our judgment. Sorting programs into these various bins, that's fairly reasonable about what you might expect.
And then
could
by,
be wrong.
And then by averaging that out, you came out with 6%.
Right, that's sort of the test. After all, our subjective opinions are weighed. I'm sure in some places we were high, some places we were low, but overall, it seemed to parody your precedent.
What's your confidence factor here, 95%?
I don't know. Again, like I said, it's not like inflation. You decide it every year. I have no idea. But it's reasonable. It's probably the most reasonable way to do it. If you can come up with a better one, fine.
Mr. Macon.
Was it part of your recommendation? I guess it was sort of by determined by the methodology that the Anchorage Central State employees be considered part of the new move to rural.
In our analysis, we considered Anchorage Central positions. Yes.
You didn't make a judgment as to whether or not that is a reasonable thing to do or anything. Right? You just said that since they're defined as central state. Therefore, they're there because that was what you were given to do.
Well, Chuck, the Planning Commission decided early on that central positions which the consultant determined to be likely to move, whether they were in Juneau or Anchorage, should be moved to Willow. That was our judgment.
But wasn't that determined about on the basis of whether or not they thought fill into your definition of central? If they fit in there, then they move.
Only those central employees. First of all, there are only so many central employees in Anchorage. Not all of those were determined by the consultant that should be moved. 500 or something like that should be moved out of 600 or 700.
I see.
But it was our determination.
Well, how did you determine that the ones that should be moved?
We tried, if they were central positions, we put them into our numbers saying central positions ought to move, except for a couple of very noted cases. One being the Department of Military Affairs is right now engaged in consolidating its own central functions with those of other individuals in the military preparedness, quote, business in the state. It's quite obvious that they don't plan in the near future to move into a capital city. So even though they fell within the definition of central positions, we thought it more responsible not to include them in the numbers.
Do you think or do you feel confident enough to make a determination
as to whether or not it's a good, whether or not it's necessary to move people who are currently functioning, and obviously functioning fairly well in Anchorage, to Capital City and Wilkes.
Well, my answer to that is certainly not. Like I prefaced my comments by saying we did not analyze the management efficiency of state government. We didn't examine ways of reorganizing it to accommodate whatever numbers you would desire. No, we counted bodies.
So, I mean, so your analysis, I mean, leaves the possibility of someone making the judgment, someone in the position to make the judgment, that that perhaps might be a better idea to keep those employees in Anchorage. Right? I mean, that's not anything you can speak to one way or another.
We have not been asked to speak to it, and no, we haven't. We have been asked the question as to whether or not we thought it functionally crucial to the new state capital to have those positions there, and I think our response has been that no, we don't feel it's functionally crucial that they be there, though it may be desirable. Again, there's a very gray area. We're not making that policy decision, but we might be able to comment on it.
Mr. Chair? Also, in the, do you remember what the number, what the state government employee growth rate was for 69? Was that, wasn't that the large year?
70.
70.
70.
72.
State after.
What, was 70?
Well, it was in the 70s, 72. 72 was a great big capital issue.
20%.
I mean, capital expenditure.
Well, let me put it another way, I guess. Trying to get a projection on the future, it seems that sometimes there are some anomalies, you know, some sort of unique circumstances, one of which is the $900 million, which for some reason or another increased the total budget by 100% in 1 year. And also the pipeline, the tremendous number of out-of-state people coming up in the pipeline has had an effect on our rate of growth of, I mean, the 1974 session, I think it was, we had the pipeline impact money. It was just, you know, millions and millions of dollars going to Fairbanks and Anchorage, and I'm sure you're aware of this, and a lot of it was for state employees to do one thing or another. And then after that, even if it was just make residency cards, but after that now, like last year in my budget, we had about 85 employees were added to my budget, and 77 of them were in unemployment insurance. And so, you know, and the reason, and most of those people that are drawing unemployment are not really, or a lot of them are not, 65% of them are not really residents of Alaska, even though legally they are. They're not, they don't reside here, and they didn't before the pipeline, but they're legally residents now, but they're drawing unemployment. And so it was a tremendous, you know, 90% of the increase was directly related to the turn the wind down the pipeline of the unemployment conversation. I think it seems to me, although I haven't done a thorough analysis of it, that those types of unique circumstances may not repeat themselves all that often from now until, so that if you take a short period of time and have them in there, you may be high. How do you feel about that?
I feel very good about that. First of all, when we sat down with the administrator who was responsible for that particular program, and we discussed, well, now that we see how many people you have here today, what would you think would be the reasonable growth of your program? He would mention that kind of factor to us, okay? And we would say, aha, okay? This is a very special case in which you would expect the growth rate of that department not at all to approach the average of the state, but to be less than that, okay? So I'd imagine if we went back through our work papers, you'd find that that would be not one of your boomer departments. So in that sense, it was taken care of. I believe also the Maine and the Arctic model, which is based on these kinds of special circumstances, also reflects that. They have three, four, five different growth scenarios, of which we picked one, okay? And as you can see, the difference between the growth scenarios are the extent to which these extraordinary circumstances are projected to occur. And sure enough, they show the phenomena that you've just suggested here. And so our cross figures reflected that also.
What do you mean your cross figures?
Well, we've compared our final 6% average to what the Maine and the Arctic model might suggest, okay? And it seems to be a fairly reasonable suggestion. If anything, I think we are somewhat on the conservative side. And the Maine and the Arctic model includes a concern for the feature that you just suggested.
Well, you know, if you're saying, you're just saying flat out that from 70 to 76, state government employment grew at 6.7. Okay? And Capital City Employment Grew at 8%. Neither one of those are central state employees. Okay, so what you're trying to do is just give some indication that maybe you're in the ballpark because one's 6.7 and one is 8%. What I'm saying is that I think in those years, especially from 70 to 75, there was a tremendous bulge in state employment directly, and everybody knows this. I mean, we could figure it out, but everybody knows this is directly related in every single budget. Every component had a little thing, pipeline impact, you know, and we budgeted all sorts of employees because of the pipeline impact for at least 1 year and most of another year. And then afterwards, now we got not as much impact, but because, you know, government has this.
Has it been a similar sort of
the economy turns down? Every one of our budgets in health and social services are doubling because the economy is turning down and people are turning to social services. You look at public assistance and unemployment and all these things, it's tremendously impacted because of the high unemployment in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And it's causing us, it's forcing us to have an increase in state employment. And of course the question is, if this is going to repeat itself a couple times, then it's an accurate indicator. But if it's not, then it's not an accurate indicator because 6.7% is way high. It might be double what it would normally increase by.
I provide those numbers only for your own interpretation, of which you have one. I frankly did not use those numbers to produce mine. I described to you how I produced mine, and those are just to provide you a couple of other ways to judge mine. And I think if what information is presented there suggests anything, and that's up to you, if it does suggest something, it kind of supports the numbers used in the plan.
Well, the question is then, do you think that the circumstances we've had in the last 6 years are likely to be prevalent in terms of the tremendous oil pipelines and those types of things? You think that's going to be prevalent for the next, whatever the range is, after 1998?
I can't answer that question. I know that our judgment of the growth in state central positions, due to all factors that might be brought to bear, would tend to support the figures we've used.
Well, I can't force you to answer, but I'm trying.
I don't know.
I'm trying to see if my indicators, the ones that I've worked up, should be thrown out, or whether I should be using mine or yours. And the one I came up with was that the most recent 5 years, 74 to 79, the rate of growth in central state, not in central state employees, but in employees, is 2.1%. Okay, now. I mean, if you're trying to say, I'm trying to come up a figure to see, to make a judgment as to whether or not your analysis makes any sense. And I got one here at 2.1, and even at the worst case, it's 4.9, both of which are a lot, are significantly lower in terms of their effects. And so I'm trying to figure out whether or not this is a bunch of junk or whether it's significant.
I think we're looking at different scorecards and there are possibly different teams on the court. We sat down and agreed on who we're looking at and where we're counting. We could come up with similar numbers and there'd be no disagreement.
Mr. Duncan. First, Mr. Chairman, I guess I got a different scorecard too, because I've got some figures here that show the growth rate between 74 and 75 at 9.8%, and between 75 and 76 at somewhere near there, and we better compare cards, because I don't have anything at 2.1, but maybe you've got them somewhere right in. But I'd like to try to ask, I'm not sure you can answer this, and I'm not even sure I can ask it. But
we're in good shape.
We shouldn't have any disagreement then.
No, none whatsoever.
But I'm wondering, I'm trying to establish some level of confidence in your method and figure you come up with. And of course, what Mr. Meekins has been talking about is the fact that he says the legislature has been conservative in the last few years, and he's been conservative in the number of state positions he's been allowing. And taking that in consideration and knowing how politics are and knowing the legislature's changed from year to year, that Mr. Meekins may not be back here in his committee, and I may not be back here in committee. And then taking into consideration your method of using historical data over a longer period of time, which of those two methods do you think is the most reasonable and the most realistic to use in establishing a growth rate in a project such as this? Which would you have the most confidence in? In the political decisions made based on what's happened because we've been sitting on this committee, or on the historical data, taking into consideration there have been a number of different people sitting around here over the years?
Well, like you said, it's a difficult question for you to ask and a difficult one for me to answer, and I think I've addressed it in the last pages of my letter here to the Planning Commission. I've turned it around. I said, if you want to do something different than the numbers we had, let's take a look at what you'd have to do. And then you in your own minds can determine whether or not you can do it. Okay? You have to divert monies to things other than hiring people. Okay? You have to cut back on programs that right now, people that are determining the need for that program or determining the progression and development of that program into the future say would expand. Okay? Those are things under your control. But you'll have to address those issues, and I'm sure you do all the time.
Okay, what I guess what we're really saying is that if we were here for from now on and made that commitment now, then we could say that the ours would be the most reasonable projection. Based on politics, we're not going to be here, so we have to go to historical data.
I think you have a very responsible statement there.
We have to go to historical data, what's happened over a long period of time, taking into consideration a number of factors, not just the political factors of whether or not we're here.
Right.
I get the indication that Representative Meekins has relied heavily upon what this legislature over the past 2 years has done and what you project we would do in the future, which we can't say because we may not be here. So I think the answer is the greatest level of confidence, if we were to look at that, would be in the method you use. Is that correct?
I believe so. I think that it comes. The methodology very closely parallels the actions that the state government now goes through to request increases in positions. It comes from the budget documents, and that process is reflected here. I think that's probably most relevant.
Mr. Bill.
We can, if the legislature comes to some basic decisions on what percentage rates of this and that they'd like to see, we can rerun our financial model. The problem is it costs $5,000 thereabouts to rerun it each time we do it. And if your committee decides that there's some specific numbers you'd like to look at, we can pump it in and run it and get it back. We've saved a little money for precisely this. So if indeed we have to have all the changes at once, though, or at least in one or two shots. We can't run 27 different scenarios, but to have that, we'd certainly be happy to rerun.
One other question. Has this type of analysis ever been done in other governments, other state governments, for example, to project a growth rate in state government?
I'm not personally familiar with it, but I do believe it's such a very basic, simple kind of approach that I would not be surprised if it has been.
You don't think that your approach is anything different than what someone else would do? I mean, you don't feel that this is a...
Well, I can't answer that. I think if you thought about the approach, you looked at the various alternatives and possibly asked other consultants to respond to it too, I'm fairly certain that we'll all come up with something fairly similar to this.
No, I'm happy with it. I wasn't trying to cut you down.
Yeah, what can I say? I really don't know what other people would have done.
Mrs. Buckholz.
Yeah, well, I have a different figure too in my mind. I know that you kept insisting on yours. I'll insist in my own way that we have been cutting down on the number of positions, so your growth rate is different from my understanding of the growth rate. However, there is one question I would like to ask, and I don't think you made it quite clear to me, is the number of employees that you proposed or suggested we should add to the new campus site. And that is the 500 employees from the Anchorage area or elsewhere that is being proposed. Could you explain to me again why it is even being suggested? Because in the present system, well, we have them working fairly well in Anchorage and are not necessarily needed in Juneau right now. Why would they be moved to the new site?
That's, yes, my. There are reasons I can respond to, but maybe.
This was a decision that the Planning Commission made. It wasn't a decision.
Oh, it was your decision.
That's right.
It was an interpretation of the intent of the legislation that we were given to move all central positions to the Capitol site.
Central meaning anywhere else. That wasn't quite what I understood when we voted for that.
It's too bad we didn't legislative representation on the commission.
Of course, the central positions that I see them are in Juneau. and not necessarily those who are the anchors.
Well, it was the consultants that identified those for us. And what did happen, in fact, is that in their original work for the Capitol Site Selection Committee, those workers were not identified, hence a smaller projected growth number. You remember there's a number in the legislation of 5,960. That's better than my brain, I'll never forget it. And then when we hired the same consultants because we thought they knew something about the Alaskan government, they said, oh, so sorry, we forgot there are central positions in Anchorage and Fairbanks and a few out in Bush, and you'd better consider these. And the commission deliberated and said, yes, we believe it was the intent of the legislation to relocate all central positions to the new capital site.
But this is your recommendation, it's not?
It's not really a recommendation, it's simply a decision that was made as part of our process, but the commission has no vested interest in it whatsoever.
We thought we were responding to the law.
Okay. Well, if you thought that way, I don't want to think it that way, so.
Mr. Meek.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try to get away from asking the consultant. Has a lot of Sam, I think, whether or not he agrees with himself. We know that he does agree with his methods and thinks, of course, that his method is the best, and he might very well be. I don't challenge that at all. But I'd like to make one point, and that is that it backs up, you know, what I think, and that is that one of the ways you think, you say here in your memo that we could possibly reduce this historical trend, which of course does not relate to central state employees, but relates to employee growth overall. So there's a question, really, whether or not central state employees have increased at that rate. But in any case, if we're gonna break this precedent, break with the precedent, one of the ways is to limit the total revenues available for expenditure on that. And I'd just like to point out that we have a permanent fund that puts 30% in. That denies 30% of our oil revenues, and another renewable resource fund, which is statutory, not a constitutional creature, that puts another 5%. So you're talking about 35% of the major source of our revenues already is prevented from going to government growth, which I think is an incredibly strong commitment and indicates a commitment not only on the legislature, which passed it, and the governor, which supports it, and everybody supports it, but the public, which voted on it, and it's in the Constitution, so it's indelible, and doesn't matter whether Duncan and I return or not. I think it shows an extremely strong commitment to reducing that rate of growth, and I just like to make that point as one that backs up my feeling that we're on that trend as opposed to another trend. But the question I have, I guess, to Ward or Chuck is that, I guess you've answered this, but you really felt constrained by the law and did not make the decision as to moving the Anchorage employees based on the merits of whether that was a good or bad idea, but on your interpretation of what the law mandated you to do. Is that right?
Mr. Duncan? This is a short one. Assuming, I don't even know if you've worked this up to your assumptions or not, assuming we're going to have an expanding population in the state, and I don't know what rate that population is going to expand, and assuming that we want to continue to provide the same level of services and the same programs to that expanding population, would it be possible to have a significant cutback in the growth rate of central state positions? Do you understand my question?
Oh, I definitely understand your question. I'm in the business to help answer that question. I have not done the work. I don't know.
You know anybody that does? Just stop talking your head then. I mean, I don't want to pin you down, or anything, but it appeared to me that in order to maintain the same level of service, the same programs that we now bring to our present population, and we're going to have an expanding and a growing population, in order to maintain those, it would be very, very difficult to significantly cut back the growth rate in the central state positions.
That does not sound unreasonable to me.
That does not sound unreasonable to you?
What I'm trying to say is that everybody tries to use good management practices, whether it's in the governments or if it's in the private sector. Right now, very good management practices are being utilized throughout the state. That's not to say they're the best, and that the current level of service delivery couldn't be, you know, at least maintained with a reduction in the resources you're committing to it through improved management. That can always be. If there's a commitment on the part of the legislature to achieve reductions in state personnel by increasing the management effectiveness of the individuals you currently have, I would think that would be a most reasonable goal for the legislature. I believe our statement that I had originally put into our report to the Capital Site Planning Commission that discussed management of the move and state government growth, I think reflects the concern I know that we had as a private consultant, as well as the commission on that issue.
Further questions?
I guess to really answer my question, it'd be quite a task. You'd have to spend some time on that.
It's all relative. I know I would have, personally, yes. Relative to what? I don't know.
Further questions, Mr. Miller? No. Do you have any further statements? Do you have anyone else in the Planning Commission? Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have other witnesses? Ms. Burke. We don't need a quorum for testimony. We're not going to vote or move any bills.
Okay. We are Carolyn Berg, a citizen of the United States and a resident of the city of Juneau for approximately 25 years. We are appearing voluntarily merely to hold the rights for Juneau. We love you all, but disagree that the initiative is constitutional. In fact, we are saying that all of the initiatives and all of the laws associated with these initiatives are unconstitutional and void. Therefore, as much as we personally love Mr. Belkey, Mr. Corbis, and all of the people associated with the Capital Site Planning Commission, we do not recognize this committee. One, we are what is called a federal district within a state, and this is right out of our LaSalle textbook under conflicts of interest, federal districts within a state. The community of Juneau and Douglas at the time of buying the property for this building got together and donated money toward this site. This we feel is a voluntary trust. Trevor Davis says his father gave money toward it. It is incomprehensible to believe that in giving money so that the United States could purchase this site, that the United States Congress could then give it back to the state to Juneau's detriment. This property comes under a Supreme Court rule that has never been reversed in Williams v. Arlington Hotel, 22F2D 669, a hotel, People v. Mouse, a soldier's home, and Juneau, a capital. They're all under the same rule, which states the manner of acquiring the land has controlling effect upon the political control and the sovereign jurisdiction of the government. This also states that if the land is used for governmental purposes, it cannot be interfered with under these circumstances. Two, the deeds underneath this building are fee simple deeds, which are the highest type of deeds you can have. The deed we are giving you is lot number 3 of block 19, the Capitol site. With the land goes the deed. And if Congress can show us a deed that transferred this property to the state, fine. But Congress cannot just say this shall be so. They must transfer that land properly with a deed. As a remainder man, we are carrying on the wishes of the deceased people who sold this property to the United States. This was not an unencumbered deed or gift, which was given to the United States. It has a condition, and this condition fits with the Supreme Court rule that states this type of property cannot be interfered with in its use. Three, we have been studying eminent domain, and we now have an article called Property Which Cannot Be Reached by the Power of Eminent Domain for a Public Use or Purpose. In the University of Pennsylvania Law Review, Volume 78, Number 2, December 1929, by Milton Colvin, a noted constitutional authority under which we feel this property comes. One, or A, dedicated property. When the people of Juneau and Douglas gave money toward this property, they gave it based on, we would say, that this property be dedicated to a state capital. However, this is something a court should settle. B, the second section of this article, which we are going to give you a copy of, is substituted ownership and identical public use, which we also come under because this is no more than taking a property of the capital away from A and giving it to B, as stated in this article. Three, the third section of this article is balancing different and conflicting uses, and we may come under this also because of the trust arrangement Congress and the President set up in Alaskan withdrawal, number one, an executive order and Congress's act under Section 11, 30 Statutes at Large, page 414, putting us under a trust arrangement with the Secretary of the Interior. We have very peculiar circumstances in our capital property. The end of this article says, quote, in introducing the subject of which this is the second article, it was said that eminent domain power has not always been able to reach desired property, even for a recognized public use or purpose, and that this must be due to something about the property which gives it the capacity to resist the power, or something about the power or its exercise which incapacitates it from reaching the property. This article brings to a close the consideration of decisions dealing with the resistant capacity of property to repel eminent domain power because of the physical nature of the property moved against, or the nature of the owner's legal interest in the property, or the relation of those intangible interests to the tangible property and to each other, and finally because of certain trusts or public uses which have impressed themselves upon the property moved against. Four, there is no necessity to move the capital. If President Carter can talk to the nation and we in our state can video legislative committee meetings, which we are doing now, communication can go back and forth to the people. Very few people actually attend. Five, Juneau is a federal withdrawal of land and a withdrawal is a federal withdrawal. Juneau is under U.S. Survey Number 7, a large federal patent. Juneau comes within the rule of a federal district within a state. How any more federal could we get? Congress made us the capital in the Organic Act, Section 2 of August 24, 1912. These deeds are in United States title even now under this rule. We are under federal eminent domain, and the state of Alaska has no jurisdiction in our capital. Congress has, and under our territorial background, this holds. We do not want one penny to be spent for a capital move until this is checked with the Attorney General or a constitutional lawyer. There is also the pertinent question, what is the public purpose for which the capital is being taken? That has to be answered. Although Congress made us the capital, it was Juneau who built up the streets and alleys, the business people who enlarged their businesses. Private people even built two apartment buildings, especially for legislators, upon 6th Street. And Mr. Carbis was one of them. We have been the capital for 7 years.